From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on August 23rd, 2024, from the Hyatt Regency lobby here at McCormick Place. Yes, the sounds that you are hearing, these are the sounds of a hotel lobby like so many we've been in this week. My studio. On this episode of The Lead, we recap the final day of the Democratic National Convention with Vice President Kamala Harris formally accepting her party's nomination for president and laying out her vision for the country. We bring you some clips, and we also have a conversation with South Carolina Public Radio's Mayon Schechter, who's been here with me this week, and we have a special guest. We're not going to say who the special guest is, but there's a special guest. Stay tuned. You have to listen to him, guys. That's when the special guest will show up. Now, we also have a couple special guests that we'd like to hear from. That's you, the listener. You can do that by calling 803-563-7169. Be our own special guest in our wind-down section, which we don't have today, but we will when we come back next week. And we need you, the listener, to be our special guest. 803-563-7169. Vice President Kamala Harris formally accepted the Democratic Party's nomination for president Thursday evening before thousands of party faithful at the United Center in Chicago.
On behalf of everyone whose story could only be written in the greatest nation on earth, I accept your nomination.
Harris becomes the second woman and first woman of color to become a major political party's nominee, a move set up just over a month ago following President Joe Biden's decision not to seek a second term and endorsing his vice president, a decision that has re-energized the party, led to record fundraising, and a historic bid that has put critical swing states back in play for Democrats. Thursday night was the culmination of a week-long pep rally for the Democrats and an opportunity for Harris to reintroduce herself to folks and make her case against Republican presidential nominee, former President Donald Trump.
Our nation with this election has a precious, fleeting opportunity to move past the bitterness, cynicism, and divisive battles of the past, a chance to chart a new way forward. Not as members of any one party or faction, but as Americans. His explicit intent to deploy our active duty military against our own citizens. Consider the power he will have, especially after the United States Supreme Court just ruled that he would be immune from criminal prosecution. Just imagine Donald Trump with no guardrails and how he would use the immense powers of the presidency of the United States. Not to improve your life, not to strengthen our national security, but to serve the only client he has ever had, himself.
Harris had a firmer, more controlled tone in her speech, the biggest of her political career. And that was in slight contrast to her more lively and bubbly campaign rallies that have drawn thousands as well. This was a more serious moment to her joyful warrior persona that she's come to embody. She took a stern tone on national security, capping a day of support voiced by veterans, military, national security figures, governors, congressmen, and even a high-profile Republican, former Congressman Adam Kinzinger, as well as activists. Here's Harris.
We can create an earned pathway to citizenship and secure our border. And America, we must also be steadfast in advancing our security and values abroad. As Vice President, I have confronted threats to our security, negotiated with foreign leaders, strengthened our alliances, and engaged with our brave troops overseas. As Commander-in-Chief, I will ensure America always has the strongest, most lethal fighting force in the world. And I will fulfill our sacred obligation to care for our troops and their families, and I will always honor and never disparage their service and their sacrifice.
Harris also addressed one of the top foreign policy issues that has led to division inside of the Democratic Party and protests outside of the DNC, Israel's ongoing war in Gaza, and the United States' support of Israel while a ceasefire deal still remains out of reach, despite recent negotiations and a trip to the Middle East by Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
And let me be clear, I will always stand up for Israel's right to defend itself, and I will always ensure Israel has the ability to defend itself, because the people of Israel must never again face the horror that a terrorist organization called Hamas caused on October 7, including unspeakable sexual violence and the massacre of young people at a music festival. At the same time, what has happened in Gaza over the past 10 months is devastating. So many innocent lives lost. Desperate, hungry people fleeing for safety over and over again. The scale of suffering is heartbreaking. President Biden and I are working to end this war such that Israel is secure, the hostages are released, the suffering in Gaza ends, and the Palestinian people can realize their right to dignity, security, freedom, and self-determination.
For more on the week here in Chicago, we have Mayon Schechter with me. We have been braving the crowds, the big city, whirlwind days, security checkpoints, and trying to see who can get the most steps per day to boot. Mayon, we have made it.
We did it, Gavin.
Wow.
We did it.
That's Mayon Schechter, folks. Thanks for that recap, Mayon. So, Mayon, it's the last day of the convention week. Unlike the last time we had the last day of a convention week where we had troubles with the road, we couldn't recap the whole week or Donald Trump's speech. I want to get your thoughts on what we heard this week from Democrats. Some of those big names are on the convention stage, as well as what you heard from some of our delegates in the delegation.
So starting off with the speakers, every day, of course, there was a different theme, whether that was foreign policy in some ways, but mostly law enforcement, gun violence. We didn't hear, or, you know, critics have argued that there wasn't any specific policies that Vice President Kamala Harris talked about in her speech, or that maybe others perhaps talked about. I do think that there were some overarching policy themes that we did hear a lot about, particularly around the area of gun violence. There were a series of gun violence family members or friends of victims who spoke, including a woman from South Carolina whose family member's unsolved murder in Myrtle Beach has not been solved, and that was due to gun violence. But we heard from former President Barack Obama, former First Lady Michelle Obama, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, former President Bill Clinton, and they were speaking of former President Donald Trump almost in a way that you would think he was still the sitting incumbent. We heard a little bit about President Joe Biden, a lot of thank yous, because you remember, Gavin, I mean, barely, I don't know, a month ago, we still thought he was going to be the nominee and this was going to be his convention. A lot of good speeches. We heard a lot of introductions of Democratic politicians that we hadn't met before. We saw potentially some speeches or some speeches that we will maybe hear in the next 4-8 years. Mm-hmm. So a very good variety of politicians, celebrities, former presidents who touched on all these areas of why they think the vice president should be the president. come November.
Yeah, I mean, like we said, it's been a whirlwind 4 weeks here where they had to completely kind of redo this entire convention that was set up to be Joe Biden's. Now he had his one night, Monday night, and then the rest of it has just been really hammering in on Kamala Harris and showing that she is ready to be the next president of the United States should Democrats elect her. So I think that's also what we heard in that speech last night from her, is that tone, like I mentioned, was a little bit firmer. Her kind of reassuring folks who maybe only have some passing idea of who she is or what she's done in the past couple of years, really trying to come out and show that she has grown over these past few years versus the woman that maybe they briefly knew from the campaign in 2020. And also maybe some things that they know about her and her ties to the border. Maybe that's like some of the things that stick out to people. So I think that speech last night, the culmination of a week-long pep rally, like we were saying, in terms of folks touting her credibility, her bona fides, to really shore up this, not a crisis of confidence, because that's clearly not the case, because they have raised so much money. They are energized. People are willing to see her fight. So when we talk about policy, I think it comes down to, we'll get there when we get there, I think. At this point, they're still in this honeymoon period, and there's still time. Like, we're already seeing them introduce policies when it comes to housing and the economy. And also, let's not mention that, you know, the Republicans, Donald Trump doesn't get out there and really talk about policy either. He talks for about an hour and a half, but not very big on the specifics either.
No, and I don't think we heard any bullet point specifics from him at the RNC. And I do think you were asking about delegates earlier, what the delegates from around the state thought about her. I do think that it was one of the kind of big takeaways, was that they're okay with not hearing the bullet pointed policy positions right now. They sort of know, again, these sort of overarching themes of what she would like to tackle, whether from foreign policy to gun violence to housing. And talking about the delegates too, I mean, they've been in such a kind of a whiplash in terms that they thought they were going to come here. They thought they were going to be nominating, casting their delegates for President Joe Biden. And instead they were doing it for Vice President Kamala Harris. There was, and I mean, there still is a lot of excitement around this candidate. It really was, the tone was so different from, I think, what we would have probably gotten had Biden stayed in the race. Yeah. And we talked to several delegates, including the youngest delegate in the delegation yesterday, who talked about they are ready to go knock on doors, make calls. I mean, I think one of the things that I also took away from this convention, and former President Bill Clinton talked about this a lot, was this is all fun. Mm-hmm. This is all a good time. But like, now the work, you've got to do the work. And so I think a lot of the delegates are taking that message very, very seriously.
Yeah, and I think that was another thing too that we saw from the Obamas, that we saw from Tim Walz, her running mate, and some other folks who spoke, was that she wasn't gonna give maybe a typical speech that we've been seeing as she crisscrosses the country. She was giving more of like a presidential coming out speech where she had to be tougher, she had to be stronger. And that worked, you know. I think it works in the situation versus the campaign trail. And that's what people heard last night. And that energized them in a way that reminded me of seeing Barack Obama take the acceptance speech in 2008 when I was out there in Denver. Like, people have that feeling still. Like, you can't really put your finger on it, but you can sense it. And a lot of people, we've been talking about this, have been asking, how does this compare to the RNC? And like we say, it's been a different kind of excitement, but you know, a lot of the delegates here are younger, they're more diverse, so there's a different energy about than it is when we were out in Milwaukee. There's so much wind in the sails. I mean, even the hype around Beyonce, and I never thought Beyonce was gonna show up, but we do have a special guest in this episode. But I do foresee that being a big bomb that she can, not a bomb, but like, come, you know, mid-September, early October, right when early voting starts in a place like Georgia or Arizona or Michigan, and then you pack a stadium with Beyonce fans and get them to register to vote or go early vote. I mean, that's how you deploy Beyonce. You don't do it when we already have a pep rally going on this week.
Right. And I'm, you know, I think we've both learned throughout our time covering politics that polls are of the moment, but the polls that were in the field during the time in which we thought Biden was still going to be the nominee showed Biden losing substantially in a lot of battleground states. Now we're seeing polling much, much closer in those battleground states, like Pennsylvania, Arizona, Georgia, North Carolina, which clearly there is such all eyes on North Carolina. Yeah. We saw Governor Roy Cooper introduce her basically last night. And so I think that this race, became so much more competitive this week, where, you know, you literally have so many of these high profile Democrats now all working together to get her elected. So the race has significantly changed. And that was clear for anyone that was observing the convention in person or even on TV, I think, this week.
Mm-hmm. Final thoughts, Mayon? That was pretty good summation right there.
I'll just say this. Going back to the calls for action, there are, what, 70-something days until mm-hmm. November 5th. And it's going to be very interesting to see truly how significantly aggressive the Democrats' ground game is. I know mm-hmm. South Carolina in the long run is still a red state, but when we were talking about North Carolina, I mean, are we going to see a flood of folks mm-hmm. really aggressively, you know, getting people to register to vote? I heard from one delegate yesterday that they have found some 60,000 voters just in their particular area that did not vote in the Democratic primary in the last one. And so mm-hmm. they see those as opportunities. I mean, these are big, aggressive goals. These are big goals. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be very interesting to see whether they can actually get boots on the ground and be aggressive about achieving them.
Like what we've been hearing and people are talking about, yes, there's energy now, still some 75 days out from the election. How do the Democrats continue to keep it going? Will they continue to keep it going? Will the Republicans get a jolt of energy somehow? Because it seems right now they're just kind of playing hard defense, and they're not getting the headlines that they used to because they're all being dominated by the latest from the campaign trail from Democrats.
So much can happen in the next 70-something days. I mean, there is always a chance that the vice president says something, does something yeah. that hurts her. There is a chance that Trump does something or says something that hurts him. So things
can... And we
got
debates coming up,
and
too.
And we have debates.
Oh, my God.
I forgot
about that, too.
Yeah.
Boy, yeah. So, you know, those are going to be those little bumps, like good, bad for someone or someone. You know, how do they deploy Beyonce, Taylor Swift, all the hype, all the things that people are talking about. Just the fact that they probably got people to watch the whole DNC last night in hopes of. I mean, we were in the hall and we were like, oh, well, do we stay? Do we go? And it's going to be hard to get an Uber, but I was like, well, what if Beyonce shows up?
What if?
And then we were there. Kamala came out. We snuck in because we could not get onto the actual floor itself. Well, we could have, but it was just too packed. And then the arena passes only get you so far. So we popped in, like stuck our heads out, took a quick photo, got yelled at, ran back, and was like, okay, let's go get an Uber.
A magical evening. I can watch this from the park. A magical evening.
Yeah, so Mayon Schechter, thank you for being a co-pilot on this magical journey. We'll be covering the campaign, probably going to North Carolina a little bit. Maybe you'll be going to Georgia a little bit. I don't know.
Mm,
we just got our little swing state fixes. Yeah. We got to do something. But thank you again, and may you guys have safe travels. I don't see any global IT meltdown happening, so that's a
good
sign.
We're knocking on wood. We're saying whatever prayers we need to say.
Thank you. And thanks for y'all for listening to the pod. You can always show us your appreciation by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or a voicemail at 803-563-7169. You can always stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. The South Carolina Lead is a production of South Carolina Public Radio. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Amy Crouch is our supervising producer. Sean Birch is our executive producer. This podcast is produced with support from PRX and is made possible in part by a grant from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, as well as listener contributions to the ETV Endowment of South Carolina. Oh, the special guest is here, folks. It's you. You were with us the entire time. Thank you. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
Hello?
Hey.
You're early.
I am. I know. I'm ready. I wanted it all to be over with. The sweet, sweet release.
Please.